Good morning. Today's Dafin Ksuvos is Nun Vav. We're on Nun Hey. We happen to be on Nun Hey Amud Alpha towards the bottom of the Amud. We're going back to the Mishnah. We're going to be reviewing the Machlokes between Rav Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim. Here in the fifth parak of the Masechta, we just opened it up yesterday. We just began the fifth parak. So yesterday we discussed almost entirely the topic of Tosefes Ksuva, the addition that comes with the Ksuva. So the halacha is that a husband, when he marries a woman, so there's a base amount that he has to write towards the ksuva, committing himself that upon either upon death or divorce, so there is a requirement to pay a base amount of 200 for a basula and 100 for an almana, and then if he wants to add on more to that, so then he can add on more. So the halacha is that he can add what's called a Tosefes Ksuva, whatever he would like. And over the course of yesterday's daf, our basic point is that a Tosefes Ksuva is going to be treated like the Ksuva proper. 14 areas of halacha, and yesterday we went over all 14 in which the Tosefes is going to be viewed as the Ksuva itself. And we continue. So we are now at the point of the Mishnah where the Mishnah brings down a machlokes between Rav Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim. At what point does he commit himself to the Tosefes? So is he committing himself to the Tosefes at the point of when he wrote it? In other words, let's say he wrote it during Erisin. So it's at that point in time he's committing. In other words, for the base amount, is if he writes a ksuva at Erisin, so he's committing at Erisin. Is that going to be true by the Tosefes as well? So Rav Elazar ben Azariah said no. He is not, the Tosefes is not going to be committing to until the actual chuppah, until Nisuin. Then and only then is he committing himself to the Tosefes. Okay, so this is the Shita of Rav Elazar ben Azariah. It's funny, by the way, because from yesterday's daf, we basically went over 14 different ways how the Tosefes Ksuva is going to be treated, like exactly like the Ksuva proper. So in other words, they're in perfect alignment with one another. And then there is a split decision by Rav Elazar ben Azariah, in that when do you commit yourself to the Tosefes Ksuva? According to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, it's not to the Chuppah, even though the base amount, you're committing already at the point of whenever you write it, but in terms of when you are committing yourself to the Tosefes, it won't be until a later point in time. It's a little bit strange. Yesterday, we said that the two go hand in hand, and Rav Elazar ben Azariah, that's how we're starting our morning, is saying that in this one particular area, there is going to be a split decision. Okay, but regardless, that's the Shita of Rav Elazar ben Azariah, and then the Gemara is going to have a lengthy discussion in terms of whether or not the halacha follows Rav Elazar ben Azariah. We're going to start it now. It starts here on Nun Hey Amud Aleph. It's going to conclude on today's daf, Nun Vav Amud Aleph. So let's start the Gemara's discussion. Rav Elazar ben Azariah Omer. We are on Nun Hey Amud Aleph. We're about 6 lines from the bottom of the Amud. So Idmar Rav Rabbi Nasan, Chadamar Halachik Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Vachadamar Ein Halachik Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Okay, so we start off with a machlokus amongst the Amoraim, exactly who the halacha falls like. Tesaim de Rabbi Nasan, Udamar Halachik Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Deshamin Le Rabbi Nasan, De Alza Basar Umdina. So I think, says the Gemara, that Rabbi Nasan is the one who is following like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. When originally presented, we don't know which Amora held like which Tana. But now what the Gemara is going to try to do is alignment. Why? Because I know that Rav Nasan subscribes to this idea of Umdina. What's the idea of Umdina? Umdina basically says is that we're going to try to figure out what you were thinking. Okay.
Psychology.
Psychology 101. Now, it's not easy. In other words, it's much easier when people articulate and when people put things in writing. So then we know what people are thinking. But just for us to figure out what people are thinking, so everyone's different, then it's very hard. Okay. Hence, Umdana is open to controversy. Meaning, will Umdana affect the halacha and the halachic outcome? Great question. It's a subject to a machlokus. But I know where Rabbi Nasan stands on the issue. How do I know that? Da'am Rabbi Nasan, halacha k'Rav Shimon Shazuri b'Mesukan. Because, so Rabbi Nasan has another psak in another area of halacha, and that is when the writing of the get. So when you commission the writing of a get, so you have to say two very critical words. You have to say the word kisvu, the two of you will write, utenu, and you must give it. So whenever instructing the writing of the get and the commissioning of the writing, so you have to add those two, you have to say those words, kisvu tenu. If you say kisvu, but you don't say tenu, it's simply no good. However, there are going to be contexts in which it's understandable why you didn't say the word tenu. So the Gemara and Gittin discusses one context, and over here, Rabbi Shimon Shazuri discusses another context, and that's Mesukan. The person is dying. and he's in critical condition, and he now wants to write the get to his wife before he dies. And the reason, of course, is so that she won't have to experience Yibum. And so he writes to get to his wife, and he says the word kisvu, but he didn't say the word tenu. Okay, so now, contextually, you understand that the reason why he didn't say the word tenu, or at least a possible reason why he didn't say the word tenu, is because he's in really, really dire straits. And he is right now in a very fragile state. So we can excuse him for not saying the word tenu. He wanted to say the word tenu, but he didn't. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. Rabbi Nassen says, I subscribe to that viewpoint. Basically, what is that a predicate of? The idea of umdana. The idea that he didn't articulate it, but we know what he meant. Okay, so that's just a clear demonstration that Rabbi Shimon Shizuri holds a umdana, and Rabbi Nassen, passing like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, also holds a umdana as well. As we turn to the top of the Amud Beis, right in the Amud Beis, and also Bishumas Meister Shol Demai. And also, the halachas like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, as far as Trumas Meister of Demai is concerned. Okay, now this is a totally unrelated topic, but I'll just give you a basic idea of what's happening over here. And that is that you purchase from an Am Haaretz. Most Am Haaretz take off Trumas Meister, some don't. Any produce that you buy from an Am Haaretz has the status of Demai, which means that as a Chumra de Rabbanan, you have to take off Trumas Meister again, but it's a Chumra. In other words, that's a Chumra that obviously we have to follow, but it's a Chumra de Rabbanan. Well, in this chumra, there are a number of leniencies. One of the leniencies is that let's say, for example, the truma of demai gets mixed in with other food. And now what do? You can't eat it. The only thing you can do is you can give it to a kohen, but you're talking about a financial loss. Okay, under normal circumstances, it's a financial loss. But over here, because it's demai, so the chachamim allowed for a kula. And according to Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, the following kula can exist, which is that you can go back to the Am Haaretz and say, did you take off Trumas HaMaisos? Now, under normal circumstances, of course, that's not going to help. The whole institution of demai was built on the fact that, of course, you could have asked him, but that's not going to help. But but under these circumstances, we're talking about Hefs and Mammon, so then you can go and you can ask him. And on top of that, there's also a distinction that could be made between asking during the week versus asking on Shabbos. And if this is the first time you're hearing it, I know that sounds strange. And I'm doing all this way too quickly, and I'm just sketching it right now because it's not really relevant to our Gemara. Okay, and on another occasion, we'll do this a lot better. Anyway, but as far as our Gemara is concerned, so the first halacha of Shimon Shizuri, which Rabbi Nassen says I'm co-signing, is that we subscribe to umdana. That's the point that we all want to really zoom in on and key in on. So Rabbi Nassen holds of umdana. So if he holds like umdana in the case of Shimon Shizuri, when the Masukin commissions the instructions of the writing of the get, and he said kisvu, and he didn't say the word tenu, but he meant tenu. I know he meant tenu, so he subscribes to umdana. Taking us all the way back over here now, this is a long path to get back to our Gemara. So going all the way back over here, so the writing of the get and adding a Tosefis. When are you committing to the Tosefis? Well, we don't know. Meaning he wrote the Tosefis in the Ksuva. You would imagine that he's going to be committing to the Tosefis in conjunction with the writing of the Ksuva. And along comes Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in our Mishnah and says, umdana. That's, I know he wrote that, but I'm telling you what he meant. What he meant was that the Tosefis is only committing to only when they get to Nisuin. That's what's going on in his head. And Rabbi Nassen, who subscribes to Umdan in another area of halacha, must hold like that over here. Yeah. Okay, that's the Gemara's thought process. It is admittedly, it takes a lot to navigate, but hopefully we navigated it well. Okay, Vichumas Maestro Shodamai. So now as we continue in the Gemara Nun Hamid Beis, and what does that mean? What does that tell us regarding Rav? Rav doesn't hold the Vumdana? I think he does. So let's say you have a Shchemira. So somebody who's dying. So the first thing you need to know is that that anything the Shchemira says, when somebody's dying, so his Amira, just every word that he says is Kiksuvim Umisurim Dami. It's like it's being written down. It's like it's given over. In other words, what we do is that once somebody has entered into the state of dying, of being a Shchiv Meira, so that he can comfortably now give clear instruction of what's going to happen. So every word that he says, you don't have to write it down, although obviously someone's going to have to record it, but every instruction that he gives is as if it's written down. Okay. So that's Matna Shchemira. So and you don't need a kinyan. Exactly. And you don't need a kinyan by Matna Shchemira. And now what happens in the event, that you have a Matna Shchemira, that also affects the kinyan as well. He does a kinyan, a maisa kinyan, on top of that. So that it's unnecessary. So what is he doing ratifying the kinyan through a kinyan? And when all he needs to do is just give verbal instruction. So Bebe Rav, Mishmei de Rav Amre. So in the yeshiva of Rav, here's how they ruled on such a situation. And that is, Arkevei Etrei Rechshei. And that is that basically what he wanted to do is he wanted to give the force of two engines, if you will. Right? Two horsepower, if you will. In other words, he wanted to fortify that kinyan. In other words, Ma'anash Chimera is one kinyan. And then on top of that, he also wanted to do a standard kinyan as well. And Ushmul Amar Lo Yadana Ma Idun Bey. So, and Shmuel says, I don't know what to do with this. And the Gemara goes on to explain both the sheet of Rav and the sheet of Shmuel. So, Bebe Rav, Mishmei de Rav Amri Akavei Atrei Rechshei, Harehi Kemanas Barivarihi Kemanash Chimera. So the way Rav interprets it is that basically it's fortification. And that is, Arei Kemanas Bari, Im Amad, Einu Yachol Achzabo. Let's say he recovers. Okay, so just again, one more thing that we need to know, and that is when it comes to Manas Chibmira, so let's say he does give verbal instruction, and Baruch Hashem, miraculously, he recovered from his illness. So you know what happens to all of his instructions? So all of his instructions are going to be recanted for a very simple reason. Clearly, he's giving away assets because he's dying. In other words, it's built into the scenario that all of this is conditional. It's a contingency. All right, I'm giving everything away with the assumption, of course, that Rachmanis, the person's going to die. But if he recovers, so that immediately is going to retract and recant on everything he instructed. So now Rav says, so that's why he did a kinyan. In other words, aside from the fact that he has the power of Shchiv Meira, he also did a kinyan so that it would be irreversible. And on top of that, Varei Kemana Shchiv Meira, Shim Amar Hilvati Laploni, Havati Laploni. So on top of that also, so do you know why if he did a kinyan, so why is he relying on Shchiv Meira? So the Shchiv Meira is because what he could do is that he can transfer loans. Let's say he has an account receivable coming to him and he would like to now go ahead and transact that to somebody else. In other words, he wants to gift it to somebody else. So, can you gift a loan through Kinyan Seder? The answer is no. Right? Kinyan Seder can do a lot of things, but Kinyan Seder cannot transfer coins over from one person to another. Okay, so, that's why, in addition to using a Kinyan Seder, he also used Matna Shchiv Meira, because Matna Shchiv Meira will allow for the transaction of even coins, of even money. Okay, so according to Rav, you know why he did both? He did both for purposes of fortification. Now, in order for Rav to say all that, you know what happened? Rav went into his mind. Rav went into the person's head. And he said, look, here's what he did. It's really strange. He did Matna Shchiv Meira, and he did on top of that a Kinyan. So now, why did he do the two? So Rav now enters into his headspace, and Rav says he did the two of them because, and there was for purposes of fortification, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, what is Rav relying on? The principle of Umdana. I know what he did, but what did he mean? Here's what he meant. That's Umdana. And Ushmul Amar, and we're going to finish the point. We made the point already, but let's just finish the Gemara. Ushmul Amar lo yadana ma idun bei shema lo gamar laknosa ala bishtar. And as far as Shmuel's concerned, Shmuel says, basically, look, I'm just so confused. I don't know what he's doing. Meaning he has the verbal authority of Matna Shchiv Meira, and on top of that, he also did a kinyan as well. Maybe what he wanted to do is he wanted to hold off until it would actually be ratified with a shtar, and Vein Shtar Lachamisa. And the problem is that shtar is ineffective after he died, meaning the shtar wasn't written up yet. Okay, so Shmuel says that's as a result of that, even though he did more than was necessary, backfiring. Now, because he did more than was necessary, so therefore, I'm worried that maybe he wanted it to be effected with a shtar, and the shtar hasn't been written yet. And if the shtar is written after he died, it's just simply too late. Okay. And
if it makes a difference if the kinyan was before the amira or after the amira.
Yeah, all fair.
Because if it's after the amira, you could say, well, he had chalut or what he had before.
Could be. Anyway, that's a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. And what we need to focus on right now is just simply the sheet of Rav. And that is that according to the sheet of Rav, what happened was that I'm going to go into his head and I'm going to figure out what the man was thinking. Why did he do Matna Shchiv Meira? And on top of that, he also did Kinyan Sudar, and it's superfluous. And what's happening over there? Ah, I know what he wanted. He wanted it to be a fortification. He wanted to be riding, basically, right, this Kinyan to be working out with 1 horsepower, with 2 horsepower. Okay, good. But anyway, it relies on Umdana. So where are we right now? So we have, okay, let's clearly outline the Gemara over here. It's a little bit of a complicated piece of Gemara. So we start off now with Rav Elazar ben Azariah saying the following, that as far as the base amount of the Ksuva, so his Chayvus begins when he writes it. He wrote it during Erusin, good. He's obligated at the time when he wrote it. But as far as the Tosefis is concerned, that is, even though he wrote it in the Ksuva, he is not committing to it until Nisuin. That's Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Now that is a predicate of Umdana. Meaning that we figured out that even though he wrote it now, but he meant it to be only in force, only when they get to Nisuin. That's Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And then Rav and Rabbi Nassan are arguing who the halacha follows like. One of them say the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, and the other one says halacha is not like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So basically what the Gemara says is, I know what I'll do. I'll figure out which of these Amoraim subscribe to Umdana. Whoever subscribes to Umdana, so he's following Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And what we just figured out after an Amud of Gemara is that they both subscribe to Umdana. We saw both by Rav and by Rabbi Nassan. They subscribe to Umdana. Rav Nassan because he holds like Rabbi Shimon Shazuri, and Rav because he holds in the case of the Shchiv Meira, that both Rabbi Nassan and Rav subscribe to Umdana. Okay, so now we got to a point now of confusion, slight confusion, because Rav and Rabbi Nassan both hold of Umdana. And one of them is passing like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, and the other one's not. So the Gemara says, "So please help." So the Gemara says like this: Ella tavayu azabaser umdana. So now, as we turn to today's daf and nun vav and aleph, so the Gemara says, "Good." So I will now tell you that both Rav and Rabbi Nassan hold of umdana, and Ella tavayu azabaser umdana mandam alacha shapir. So whoever is on board with Rav Elazar ben Azariah, it's a shidduch, it's a perfect match. And then mandam da amar in alacha hachinami umdan daitahu. And you could say the halacha is not like Rav Elazar ben Azariah and still subscribe to Umdana. It's funny because once we open it up to Umdana, I don't want to say you could say anything, but I'll say it. You could say anything. I mean, in other words, Umdana basically is what's the person thinking, right? Who knows what people are thinking? But maybe over here, what people are thinking is that I'm committing myself to the ksuva, the base amount, and to the Tosefes. And you know what? I want to be obligated right now. Why? Because in other words, I want her to feel closer to me. And if she sees that I'm making this kind of financial commitment to her, so you know what? Kirv dies. We're going to be even closer, right? She'll really feel like a connection to me. She'll really feel that I'm committed. Okay, good. So it could be that Umdana will allow us to conclude that the Hischaivas of the Tosefis begins immediately, effective immediately. We can argue, or we can also argue that Umdana will say no, that he only wants the Tosefis to kick in only at the point of Nisuin. So Umdana can really go in either direction. We can have both Rav and Rabbi Nassan subscribing to Umdana, and oh, by the way, they do. And on top of that, they can also be disagreeing in terms of where Umdana is going to lead us to in the case of Tosefis Ksuva.
Where is the intersection between Umdana and Devarim
Shabbalev? Devarim Shabbalev, right. Umdana means that something happened and it demands an interpretation. Like the case of Shchiv Meira. Shchiv Meira is like a great example.
But if there's no declaration, how could you make
Because, in other words, something happened. Shchiv Meira, he made a verbal authorization, which is Shchiv Meira is entitled to do. And on top of that, he made a kinyan as well. So he did both. And now it requires an understanding of why did he do both. So that's a good example of Umdana. Umdana now is going to force us to interpret why exactly the what seems to be superfluous and repetitive nature of his action. Dvarim Shebelev just simply means, right, it's a great question. Dvarim Shebelev just simply means that the person was thinking it, okay, that's great, how am I supposed to know? But over here, Umdana is forcing, we're forced to interpret. Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Kamei de Rabbi Yana, V'kamer Halacha Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Okay, and so just a little bit of end notes over here, meaning is Halacha like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, yes or no? So the Gemara is going to go back and forth on this and for the next couple of lines. So according to Rabbi Chanina, he said, Halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Amar Lei, Rabbi Chanina heard this, sorry. Rabbi Yana heard this, he lost his mind. And he says, Pokri Karach Levra, you take that and you right outside the base medrash. I don't want to hear that again. And that is, ain't halacha K'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. I'm telling you that the halacha is not like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. I'm Rav Yitzchak bar Avdim, Mishum Rabbein, halacha K'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. I'm Rav Nachman and Rav Shmuel, halacha K'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Rav Nachman didei Amar, ain halacha K'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Right? We're going back and forth on this very issue. And our dime, Mishmed Rav Nachman, Amar, halacha K'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. We're almost done. Ve'af agav delat Rav Nachman, v'amar kol dain de dain K'Rav Elazar ben Azariah, hacha v'achi tehave. And Rav Nachman threatened any judge who judges like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, this is what's going to be of him. He doesn't have to finish the threat, right? Rav Nachman has no patience for anyone passing like Rav Nachman, like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. But afilu hachelach Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Despite the fact that Rav Nachman felt very strongly not to paskin, the Gemara says we do, and halach lemaisik Rav Elazar ben Azariah, and the Gemara, the Gemara finally concludes that the halach lemaisa, practical halach, is that we do follow like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. I say practical halach, meaning this is not coming up that often, right? Our ksufas are being written up at the time of nisuin. That's a little bit unfair. What we do is that we take nisuin and we take kedushin and we package them together in the same evening. But okay, in other words, it's not gonna play much of a halachic role in the way we do marriages. But the Gemara's conclusion, however, happens to be really clear, and that is that we do pass like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, which means now, okay, in other words, here we finally conclude our first topic for today, that when a husband writes a ksufa for his wife and he's writing it during Erusin and he commits himself to a base amount, and on top of that a Tosefis as well, the base amount is effective immediately. His obligation for the base amount begins right now at the writing of the ksuva. But as far as the Tosefis is concerned, the obligation only begins at the time of Nisuin. Ad kan. That takes us now to the end of our first topic of our day. Bayi Ravin. Okay, so we are continuing in the Gemara. So in the Gemara Bayi Ravin, it's still towards the top of the Amud. It's at the two dots, about a dozen lines from the top of the Amud. Ravin asked the following question. Nichnas al-chuppah v'lo nivel amahu. Okay, so now, this is a question within Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So again, Rav Elazar ben Azariah says that his commitment towards the Tosefis will not begin until Nisuin, the second stage of marriage. So the Gemara says, okay, how about this? Let's go even to a deeper dive into the position of Rav Elazar ben Azariah. The Tosefis only kicks in at what point exactly? So that's what we're asking. So we know Nisuin is the second stage of marriage. Nisuin is really a composite of what is called Chuppah and, of course, Bia. In other words, the actual intimate act between husband and wife. So now, how about this? According to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, let's say they had Chuppah, but they haven't yet had Bia. Right? Nichnas l'chuppah v'lo nivela. So at this point in time, is he now committing himself to the Tosefis? Okay, effectively, what the Gemara's question is as follows. Look, the umdana, the mindset of the husband is, I'm going to give you Tosefis because, once we get to that second stage of marriage, then I'm really on board committing myself to that extra amount. Good. When he thinks that, so which aspect is he thinking about? Is he thinking about the actual wedding itself, or is he thinking about the act of bia between the two of them? That's what the Gemara is asking. So mahu. So chibas chupa kona or chibas bia kona. So which aspect of the second stage of marriage is he focusing on while committing himself to that extra monies? So tashma didni Rav Yosef shalok kasav la ela al chibas laila rishon. Okay, so so over here in a brisa. So the Brisa writes the following. What was he thinking? He's thinking about Laila Rishon, that first night. Okay, so now, the Brisa says it a little bit differently than the way we've been saying it, but hopefully with a proper understanding of the Brisa, it can help clarify our question. So, Iyamar b'shal mechibas chupa hainu damar Laila Rishon. So, Ela Iyamar chibas bia kone, bia b'laila harishon isa b'inkan ve'elach leisa. So in other words, if we're focusing only on Laila Rishon, it sounds much more like we're talking about Chuppah, because Chuppah is Laila Rishon. It's a one-time event. On the other hand, Bia, so Bia is going to be for the duration of their marriage. It's not a one-time event. So the Gemara says, Ve'elamai Chuppah. So Chuppah b'Laila Isa b'yamam alaysa. So the Gemara says, come on. So you tell me that we're talking about Chuppah. Chuppah, it doesn't have to be at night. Chuppah can be done during the day. So l'tamech Bia b'Laila Isa b'yamam alaysa. V'amar rav imhaya b'beis af al-mutar. Bia doesn't have to be at night. Bia is preferable for Bia to be occurring at night. In other words, there are a lot of hilchot snias as it comes to Bia between husband and wife. Good. It's an adult conversation, and we don't have to have it now. But thankfully, but the one thing The one thing that is, generally speaking, the position of the Gemara is that husband and wife should be intimate at night, not during the day. However, there you could set the circumstances in which bia would be permitted during the day. So bidei safel, if you're in a dark room, so you can have bia during the day. Anyway, the point is that bia is not limited to nighttime as well. So the Gemara says, halo kasha, arech arech amash malan. So the bia balayla. So the Gemara says, okay, but maybe the Brisa is telling me the following. Look, let me teach you a little bit of Hilchos Derech Eretz, meaning proper way for a husband and wife to be with one another. And that is at night. Could they be together during the day? Yeah, but Derech Eretz, but proper conduct should be that they have bia at night. So Orech Arech Kamash Malam Balayla. So Ela Chupa Kasha. But as far as chuppah is concerned, so right, chuppah could be done during the daytime as well. So kasha, the Gemara says it's difficult. Okay, so the lashon of the brisa really is unclear. Meaning, as much as we're trying to clarify, we haven't. And the brisa says that when he's thinking about that Tosefis, it's for Laila Rishon. What's that a reference to? Now we still could go in either direction. It could be talking about the chuppah. It could be talking about the bia. So. So chuppah nami lo kasha dekem destam chuppah lebiya kaime arachara kamash malan de balayla. So the Gemara says, okay, and it could be a reference to chuppah. Chuppah can be done during the day, yeah, but chuppah obviously precedes bia, and bia is at night, so chuppah should be at night as well. So fine. So where the Gemara stands on all this is unclear, still unclear. According to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Tosefis is not committed until nisuin, second stage of marriage. Which aspect of Nisuin? We have two candidates of what's on the table. Either the aspect of Chuppah or the aspect of Bia. And right now, the Gemara is simply undetermined in terms of which aspect of Nisuin we're really focusing on. Next, by Rav Ashi, Nichnas l'Chuppah Pirsa Nida, Mahu. So let's say, Nichnas l'Chuppah Uporis Nida. So she was a Nida while having the second stage of marriage. Now, it's unfortunate. But it's temporary. It's not, you know, it's obviously not gonna last. But obviously, generally speaking, the chuppah would be a time where they're going to be experiencing the bia rishona together, husband and wife. But okay, she was a nida at the time. The Gemara's question now is that according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, is he now financially committing himself at that point in time? The Gemara's question over here at face value, which is the way I'm presenting it this morning, is going to be, this is just simply a financial question. Again, that has been the only question the Gemara has been litigating for the entirety of this morning. When is he committing to the Tosefis Ksuva? So we know Nisuin according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah. We have so far tried to figure out which aspect of Nisuin, Chuppah or Bia. We yet don't know. What if, this is now the second follow-up question of the Gemara. What if, let's say, during Chuppah she happens to be a Nida, which means that they can't have Bia together. So, nichnas l'chuppah pirsa nida mahu. So, imtim salam rechibas chuppah kona chuppah dechazi l'biya. Ava chuppah delochazi alo. Odim alo shna. And even if I'm saying that the Tosefis is being committed for a chuppah, but maybe that's chuppah that arrives to biya, that achieves biya. But if it's chuppah that doesn't achieve biya, maybe not. So, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Okay, the teiku. Huh?
But the nesuil is chav.
Oh, okay, fine. So, Chaim points out over here, And so a topic of discussion, which is a very broad topic, it's a very big topic, and that is that if she's a nid during chuppah, it sounds like the chuppah is effective. The only thing the Gemara is asking is whether or not there's this chayvus on the Tosefis. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara. That's a simple reading of the Gemara. And meanwhile, the Rambam's of the position that a chuppah's nida simply does not work. If she's a nida while during chuppah, it simply doesn't work. Okay, so what you would need to do is you would have to go back to our Gemara, reread the Gemara, and see it through that lens, which I'm not going to do right now. In other words, we're going to go on. We have a great opportunity to catch up ground. You'll ask the rabbi how we paskin.
If we have a wedding that's planned,
and she's an Edom, you'll still go through with the ceremony.
They still do chuppah, but it's not necessarily. She's not completely married.
So again, you ask a rabbi. In other words, it's a machlokas. What we now know is that it's a machlokas whether it's effective or not effective, and you ask the rabbi what to do.
Do we hold like the rabbi?
Yeah, that's what he's asking. I'm punting on the question. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ratzah Kosev LeBesula V'Chule. Okay, so we're at the next part of the next junction of the Gemara. So we find ourselves now on Nun Vav Amud Aleph. We're halfway down on the Amud, a little bit more than halfway down the Amud, and at the two dots, and Rabbi Huda. So Rabbi Huda says, Ratza Kosan Lebesula. Now, so again, now we are going over that base minimum. Okay, we have left the world of Tosefes. Good. So for the last 2 days of Gemara, we've been discussing Tosefes, and now we're just going back to the base amount. A man marries a woman, he must be giving her a base amount. A base amount of, if she's a Basula, 200, and Amana, 100. In fact, the word Amana is a contraction of the word Mana. Okay, good. 100 for the Amana. So now, let's say, he says to her, he asks her, the Gemara said that.
That's interesting.
The Gemara said it. Now, that I can say over easily, that's found in the Gemara. So now he goes over to her and he says, look, can you do me a favor? Could you cut me a break? In other words, look, I'm right, love you, want to marry you, but just cut me a break on the ksuva. Would you do that for me? She's like, sure, no problem at all. And so can we now cut into the base amount? So if you remember in the Mishnah, it's a major machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. So right now we're going to be focusing on Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda says, sure, she can cut him a break. In fact, she'll write him a receipt. In other words, the ksuva, he'll write the ksuva for 200, and she'll write him a receipt that I got paid 100 already. Okay, she didn't get paid 100 already. It's just basically a way of cutting his financial obligation into half. Wonderful. So now the Gemara is going to have the following discussion, and that is whether or not we write receipts or we don't write receipts. Now, I know this is a funny discussion, but we have it a number of times throughout Shas, and this being today's daf being one of them, and that is the following consideration, okay, a loan. Could we just simply describe what a loan looks like? So a loan looks like basically that you're in need of money. I'm going to lend you money. So I will lend you money. But what you're going to do is that we're going to write a note. And we're going to write a note. Two witnesses are going to sign the note. And me, the creditor, I'm going to be holding the note. So that in the event that you don't pay me up, so I'm just going to take the note out. And obviously that will be my evidence that you owe me the money. And I'll get paid. Good. So far, so good. And the note also is going to have allow me to have a lien on your properties, but okay. Anyway, so that's the idea of a note. Now, let's say you come back and you pay me my loan. Now, what happens at that point in time? So what happens now is I'm going to take the note and I'm going to tear it up and destroy it as well as I can. Maybe even burn it in a fire. In other words, I don't want that note to exist anymore because as far as the note holder is concerned, his entire evidence, his case is built on the fact that he's holding the note. So once I pay and now I get the note back, so I exchange now the payment for the note and then I destroy the note as quickly as possible. How about this? How about I pay and you know what? I won't take back the note. We'll just write me a receipt. And oddly enough, of the debates that occur in the Gemara, this is a major controversy amongst Tanaim in terms of whether or not it should be written a receipt. Okay? Should he or should not write a receipt? The word for receipt is shover, and shover literally means to break, but whatever. Over here, it's a receipt that's going to be written. So can we, should we write a receipt for the borrower? So some Tanaim are of the position, never. Never. Why? Because it puts an unfair burden on the borrower. The borrower now, the only way he's going to defend himself against the note holder is by holding on to the receipts. Okay, that's an unfair burden that's placed on the borrower. Some Tanaim are of the position, no receipts.
Just give him back the note.
Just give me back my note. Okay, now where it becomes trying is let's say I go back to the lender and I say to the lender, look, I'm ready to pay you half. Oh. Now we have a challenge. So if you subscribe to the position that you can write a receipt, so good. So write a receipt that you paid back half. But if you're of the position that no receipts, you can't write a receipt. So what happens when you want to pay back half the loan? So what do you do?
You write it on the note.
So, oh, okay, good. Okay, good. Good, good. You have a certain intuitive nature because you've been doing this a lot. And the Gemara now is going to be discussing. And we're discussing it now in the context of the ksuva, but a ksuva again. We could look at the ksuva, not can. We are looking at the ksuva as just a standard obligation between creditor and borrower. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kosov Lebesula. So the Sav Rabbi Yehuda de Kosov Shover Vatanan. So me Shepara Mixas Chovo. What happens when someone pays back the partial loan? So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Yachlif. So Rabbi Yehuda says, okay, so here's what you have to do, and that is Hachlafa. And you have to now exchange, meaning tear up the original note and write a new note with the balance of the loan. And Rabbi Yossi Omer Yechtov Lo Shover. And Rav Yossi is of the position, no, you write a receipt for the borrower. Okay, so it's as I pointed out, it's a machlokas tanayim, whether you write a receipt or you don't write a receipt. But I know where Rabbi Yehuda stands on this issue. Rabbi Yehuda could not be clearer on this issue. You don't write a receipt, according to Rabbi Yehuda. On a partial payment of the loan, you tear up the original note and you write a new note. So over here, so the Gemara says, I'm trying to wrap my head now around our Gemara. Because our Gemara says is that what he'll do is he'll write the ksuva for 200 and he'll ask her, can you cut me a break? She says, sure. And she wrote him a receipt. Okay, that collected already 100. So I'm Rav Yirmiya Kishashav Ramitocha. So Rav Yirmiya says, okay, I don't, there's no problem over here. In other words, what you're going to do, Alan already intuited the Rav Yirmiya's answer. And that is that you're going to be writing the receipt in the ksuva itself. In other words, in the ksuva itself. So obviously that's where the obligation is going to be written. The whole note now is the ksuva. And in the ksuva itself, you just simply write that I'm committing myself to 200, of which you already received 100. Okay, you write it in the ksuv itself. Right. Okay, that part's true, but in other words, but at least
it's a lie. She didn't get the money.
She's just forgiving it. It's just another way of saying she forgave it. So Abaye says unnecessary. In other words, you don't have to do that over here. Bishlam asam vade pare. Dilma mirkas tevarta mapik leilishtare hader gabi zimnachrina. So look, let's talk about in general. Let's talk about specific to over here. In general, you know why Rabbi Huda is opposed to receipts. So I know we already said it, but the Gemara really spells it out. And that is that if you are telling the borrower you want to make sure he doesn't come at you again, you hold on to your receipt. And if he loses the receipt, what's going to happen is that. The note holder, look, if he's an honest person, that's great, right? More power to him, right? And obviously, it goes without saying, I'll say it, we should all be honest people. But he's holding a note against somebody. And right now, his only protection, the borrower's only protection is the receipt. And if he loses it, the note holder is going to come at him again for the loan. So the Gemara says that's in general. And that's why Rav Yehuda is opposed to receipts, no receipts. But over here, Vada Yaivla, did he give her anything? Meaning, in the construct of Iksuva, was there money actually transacted? Of course the answer is no. All he's doing is that he's committing himself, this is what I will be obligated to you upon death or divorce. Milsabamahu da Amrile. So, Inatre Natre, and Ilanatre, Iudan da Afsed and Afshe. So over here now, he's committing himself to 200. He's asking her, can you cut me a break? She says, sure. And now what Rabbi Huda will tell you is, I'm comfortable over here with receipts. Because this is receipt against what? Actual money being transacted? No. No money's been transacted. And now she's doing him a favor. So now she's doing him a favor. So okay, so Rabbi Huda says, in this case, write a receipt. You know what? If he'd like to take advantage of the favor, he'll hold on to the receipt. And if he wants to be irresponsible, so he'll lose the receipt. But in other words, there's no real loss being discussed over here. Okay, now Bishlam Abai, so what do we have right now? So we have Rav Yehuda, who generally does not subscribe to receipts. And over here, in the case of Suva, Rav Yehuda and Amishnah is holding up by a receipt. We have two approaches of how to handle that, either Rav Yirmiya or Abaye. Rav Yirmiya says that the receipt over here will be written in the Suva itself. And Abaye says that no, this is not a general case of a loan. This is not your typical lender. This is somebody who's committing himself but didn't actually give the money yet. So Bishlam Abaye lo amar Rabbi Yirmiya lo ketanei shevrata mitocha. So I understand why Abaye didn't like Rabbi Yirmiya's answer, because it didn't say it in the Mishnah. In other words, if we're talking about a shover written into the ksuva, you would see that in the Mishnah. Ela Rabbi Yirmiya my time lo amar Abaye. So, but meanwhile, Rav Yirmiya doesn't subscribe to Abaye. So, gzera shover da'acha, atu shover da'ama. Because what Rav Yirmiya is concerned about is, look, you start making exceptions, and the whole thing's going to fall apart. Okay, that's generally speaking the rule, right? The more exceptions that you make, the more it's going to fall apart. I see this so many aspects of my life, so many areas where legislation is made. Oh, everyone here knows I teach in a school, and anytime. So it's you know, almost a guarantee. Anytime you start making exceptions, I know here's the policy, but for you, we'll make an exception. And you're right, at that point in time, everything falls apart. Okay, good. Okay, so. So good. So that's what's going to happen over here. Okay, time is the kasvala. So now that we're continuing in the Gemara, we're towards the bottom of the Amma. Time of the kasvala. Aval al pelo. So the reason why you're going to be forgiving partial payment is because it was written down. Okay, how did you write it down? We just discussed it, but it was because it was written down. So, but in other words, what you can't do is that you can't verbally agree to this. Why not? Why can't you verbally agree to this? So am I, Davar Sheben Mamon, and Shamin Lele Rabbi Yehuda Damar, Davar Sheben Mamon Tanai Kayam, Ditanya. You know, you can make things conditional, and a Davar Sheben Mamon, go for it. Ditanya Omer Li, Yishai Rehab Mekudeshes, Yaman Hashen Li, Alai, Sher Ksuz Ve'ona, Hareze Mekudeshes. So let's say you marry a woman and say, look, love you, but I don't want to have to support you. Okay? You okay with that? You okay with such an open relationship? Yeah. So tonight, Bato. So according to Rabbi Meir, so congratulations two times over. Number one, you got married. Mazel tov. And number two, your conditions, throw them out the window. In other words, because you're being masna mashakasa b'Torah. The Torah gives very clear definition of what marriage is. Marriage comes with responsibility. You want to shirk that responsibility and you want to make a condition that I'm going to redefine marriage. No, you can't redefine marriage. Okay, good. So so that's the shita of Rabbi Meir. And as a result of that, and by the way, this is an important point, which I'm sure I've accentuated in the past, but let's say it again. In other words, if you try to make a Tanai and the Tanai is negated, it doesn't undo the what you wanted to effect, meaning you wanted to effect marriage, but marriage with a condition. So the condition is negated, but the marriage still kicks in. So the Gemara says good. So that shita's Reb Meir. Reb Meir says that you're not Tanai's battle. And Reb Yehuda Omer B'davar Sheben Mamon Tanai Kayem. So Reb Yehuda says as far as the monetary aspects of it. Now Sherksus and Ona, I know we discussed earlier in the Masechta what that refers to. Okay, right now I'm going to give a simple pshat, because that's generally speaking what I do in the daf. I will give a simple pshat. Shares the food. Ksus is the clothing, and Ona is the intimacy between husband and wife. So let's just talk about food and clothing. Those are monetary aspects. Good. So as far as those two are concerned, and the way I'm presenting it is like Rashi. So as far as those two are concerned, those are monetary aspects. You want to make conditions on monetary aspects? More power to you. Either Torah says that you're monetarily obligated, you're financially obligated. Yeah, but when it comes to money, you can renegotiate, right? Other areas of the Torah, there is no room for renegotiation. But when it comes to monetary aspects, you want to go ahead and renegotiate. So go ahead, renegotiate. So Rabbi Yehuda, Sefer Rabbi Yehuda. So now what happens is the following. We just learned together that according to Rabbi Yehuda, monetary obligations can in fact be renegotiated. And so therefore, renegotiation just simply is a verbal agreement between the two parties. Oh. So over here, the Gemara is asking the following question. Rabbi Yehuda says to her, Rabbi Yehuda says, here's what the husband's saying to her. I'll write you the ksuva. Can you forgive me a little bit of it? She says, sure. And they write it down. And we just went over how exactly it's going to be written. With a receipt written into the ksuva, she's going to write it down. The Gemara is wondering right now, when it comes to Rabbi Yehuda says that when it comes to financial obligations, they can be renegotiated even as a condition, even as a verbal condition. Hey, I got a great idea. Let's not write it down. Let's just agree, right? So Savar Rav Yehuda Ksuva Midrabban V'Chachamim Asu Chizuk LeDivrei Am Yosef Mishal Torah. So the Gemara says, okay. So Rav Yehuda says that financial aspects of the Torah can in fact be renegotiated, but when it comes to Ksuva Zedin Derabbanan, and this is a major debate in today's Daf Nun Vav, we're going to be seeing two sides of this issue. In terms of whether ksuva is the Rabbanon deraisa, right now what the Gemara is arguing is that according to Rav Yehuda, it's a din de Rabbanon, and because it's a din de Rabbanon, so therefore the Chachamim said, I don't want people to be lax on the area of ksuva. So you know what? Torah, finances of the Torah can be renegotiated. Finances of the rabbis cannot be renegotiated. So the Gemara says, Vare Peiros. The Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but I'm going to point the following. And that is that when it comes to Paris, now we know that Paris is a dividend that the husband's entitled to once he marries her. And that's a din de Rabban, and we've established that already. And lo avdu Rabban and chizik le dinan. And meanwhile, the rabbis weren't tough on this issue, because Rabbi Yehuda Amar la'olam, hu elcho pere peros, ashi ichtov la dinu dvarim ein li b'nechsech uveperesem, uveperesem ad olam. Let's say they get married, and he basically is going to be writing down that I'm not going to be eating your pear. So it's a question of exactly how to formulate it. And the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda debate exactly what the proper formula is. But the point is that for Rabbi Yehuda, as long as you use the right formula, so what you could do is that you could dispense with peros. Dispense with peros? Peros is a rabbinic institution. You can't be lax on rabbinic institutions. So v'kaimala my kosev omer. And there's an important point over here. I know we just said that you're writing it down, but you don't have to write it down. You could just simply make a verbal agreement, and that would be sufficient. So now, a verbal agreement on a din de Rabbanan. Now, on a din de Araisa, Rabbi Yehuda says, that could be renegotiated. But on de Rabbanans, no. In other words, because the Chachamim wanted to make sure that their legislation is going to be abided by and subscribed to, and so therefore they were tougher when it comes to their legislation. Meanwhile, I just showed you by Peros, Rabbi Yehuda allows for renegotiation. So the Amar Rabbi lechol yesh ksuva v'lo lechol yesh peros milsa deshchicha avdu be Rabban Chizuk milsa t'lo shchicha lo avdu be Rabban Chizuk. So the Gemara says, okay, and so here's what I'll say. I'll say that when it comes to your general dine de Rabbanan, like ksuva is universal. Every marriage has ksuva in it. So there, the Chachamim were tough. But when it comes to peros, not everyone has peros. Peros means that she's coming into the marriage with property. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. This is a davar shelo shchiach. The Chachamim didn't make a gzera. Let's do one more back and forth. So harei chamarim d'shchichel v'lov d'rabbanan chizuk l'dinan chamarim shenichnasu l'ir v'amar echamehem shalicha dar v'shal chavera yashan shali eino mesukan v'shal chavera mesukan eino ne'emanim. So let's say two sellers are coming into town, two peddlers are coming into town, selling, in this case, produce. One is praising his friend, and meanwhile telling him, don't buy from me, buy from my friend. And what we're worried about over here is collusion, because, yeah, we've had this before, right? This comes up a number of times. And we're worried about collusion. And so even though they're Amei Haaretz, and generally speaking, right, they can't testify about their own, but they can testify about others. But here we're worried about collusion. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ne'emanim. And Rabbi Yehuda says that they're going to be believed, because we're only talking about Demai. We're not talking about anything more serious than Demai. Rashi entertains that maybe we're talking about Chadosh. Rashi says we're not talking about Chadosh. So anyway, we're talking about Demai. And according to Rabbi Yehuda Ne'emanim, they're going to be believed. So Amar Abaye Vade the Devarim Avdu Rabban Chizuk Safik Devarim Lo Avdu Rabban Chizuk. So one way to approach is that, look, on a standard din de Rabbanan, the rabbis were tough. But over here, we don't know. Demai is a suffix, and we don't know. And so therefore, they're going to be Mekel. And Rabba Amar Abba Demai Hikilo. Rabba says a little bit differently. He says that, look, the whole institution of Demai is a Chumrah. And so therefore, they were Mekel. They're going to be Neman in such a case. Okay, Adkan, we're going to pause over here in the Gemara. It's the perfect place to pause. And let's simply recap our day today. Okay, we did really good in terms of catching up. Let's recap. So, number one, Rav Elazar ben Azariah says that the Tosefis is not going to be committed until the actual Nisuin. And the base amount is going to be committed at the time of writing, but the Tosefis not until Nisuin. So, number one, Rav Elazar ben Azariah is fundamentally principled on this concept called Umdana, on the fact that this is what he's thinking. Okay, in other words, that's what he wrote, but this is what he's thinking. And we're going to determine the halacha based on what the guy was thinking. That's very hard, as we pointed out, but that's behind Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Rav and Rabbi Nassan are arguing whether halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, and meanwhile, Rav and Rabbi Nassan both hold a vumdana. So how can that be? And the Gemara says it can be. It can. Because umdana can go in a number of different directions. Right? Umdana, the principle is, I know what he's thinking. Okay, now tell me what he's thinking. Okay, again, it's very hard. But anyway, and then the Gemara in Anun Vav Amud Aleph, in the top of the Amud, has a lengthy discussion in terms of what the halacha follows. Like the Gemara's conclusion, the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Halacha la maisa, the Gemara says. Okay, even as we say that, the Gemara had a couple follow-up questions from Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Number one, which aspect of Nisuin is he committing himself to the Tosefis? On the Chuppah or on the Bia? What if it's Chuppah's Nida? So is he committing himself under those circumstances? Good. The Gemara does not answer either of those questions. The Gemara leaves those questions unresolved. And then we talked about receipts, right? The rest of today's daf was a discussion of where she's forgiving half of the ksuva and whether or not a receipt is being written. If from the Mishnah, the language of the Mishnah, it sounds like you're writing a receipt. The problem is, I know where Rabbi Yehuda stands on receipts. He's anti-receipts. Okay. A lot of things in life to be anti, but Rabbi Yehuda's anti-receipt. So how in the world could our Mishnah be talking about her writing a receipt when meanwhile Rabbi Yehuda's anti-receipts? The Gemara gives two answers to this question, Rabbi Yirmi and Abaye. The Gemara goes over why Abaye didn't like Rabbi Yirmi's answer and why Rabbi Yirmi didn't like Abaye's answer. And the last discussion that we had today, and that's a really big one, is the issue of verbally contracting. Meaning over here, it's a financial arrangement and you want to make a condition. Why not just simply make a verbal agreement? In other words, this is what the Torah wants from finance, from a financial standpoint, but we can verbally agree that we're going to renegotiate. So why not? In other words, a tanai, a simple condition. So why can't we do that? And there are a number of occasions in which you could do that according to Rabbi Yehuda, right? According to Rabbi Yehuda, if you want to renegotiate the terms of marriage financially, so you could do that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, right? I'll marry you, but no support. Eh, sure, no problem, no problem. According to Rabbi Yehuda, so why not do the same thing over here? Why does our Mishnah say that she wrote down that I received half? So the Gemara says, the Gemara had a couple of approaches, but the approach the Gemara favors is that the ksuvas derabanan. Once we're talking about a din derabanan, asu rabanan chizuk ledivrehem. Rabbis were tough. On their legislation, they have to be tough on their legislation, right? So the perception is that, it's a din derabanan, okay, I could relax. And the Chachamim understood that, and so therefore, asu chizuk ledivrayim, and so therefore, finances of the Torah can be renegotiated, finances of the Chachamim cannot. But then what we did is that we pointed out that there are a couple times where it seems like, even by dini derabanan, the Chachamim relaxed, and the Gemara answered up for those occasions. Ad kach.